it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old No. 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
Doug. Here we have the Limu Emu in its natural habitat, helping people customize their car insurance and save hundreds with Liberty Mutual. Fascinating. It's accompanied by his natural ally, Doug.
Limu? Is that guy with the binoculars watching us?
Cut the camera. They see us.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Savings vary. Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
Anybody, anywhere, anywhere.
It's time to take command.
The Cardiac Commanders are the Clutch Commanders.
With former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command for the Logan Paulson film review on the Commanders' 34-27 loss in Atlanta. With the former UCLA Bruin, longtime NFL tight end Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. You can check me out on 106.7 The Fan every day from 2 to 6.30. We give you three episodes of Take Command every single week. You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTube pages. More importantly, subscribe, rate, review, download, wherever you get your audio to the Take Command podcast. Logan, Atlanta was one of your stops in the NFL, so you were back in one of your old cities. I asked you if you had checked out any of your old haunts. You don't really have any haunts, though. So I guess, did you go to the house where you sat in without television, pretzel style, and studied your film?
Dude, I will say, like, that, I know you're doing a little bit of a bit. Like, when I was in Atlanta, that was the vibe. I had one chair, one table. It was a folding table that I could watch film at and take notes. There was no TV. It was all off the iPad. And I had an air mattress that I slept on the floor in the living room.
No.
It was pretty austere when I was in Atlanta. Like, that was
you're near, a maniacal person.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Did you rent a room or did you have a home? Like,
I rented, cause like, I wasn't sure if I was going to bring the family down. So I rented, Austin Hooper had a rental property there that I rented from him. And, basically came down, like, my wife's like, I don't like the schools. I don't like, you know, like, it just wasn't a good vibe for our kids at the moment. So she decided to stay in Ashburn. So I was like, well, I'm responsible for furnishing this. Like, this is what this thing's going to look like. It's going to be pretty minimal. Like, I told you at the time where I stayed in San Francisco, if I showed you those videos of the place I stayed at in San Fran, bro, next time I see you, I basically stayed in a hostel in San Francisco, like, with, it was a room I could touch both walls. They had basically, like, taken cardboard and put it up as the divider between me and another room. Like, I could hear the person in the other room breathing. And that's where I stayed for about 8 weeks when I was in San Francisco.
That is,
I got to show you the video. Next time we're together, I'll show you the video.
NFL football, baby. That is incredible. Well, I just like the idea of you. Did you put anything on the walls or pictures?
No.
Like, I mean,
no.
So if we look at this, like, you know how kids go to George Washington's house, like, if I took a field trip and took my kids and said, this is where Uncle Logan lived for an extended period of time. Like, we're asking questions, right? Like, you're a suspect in something. I mean, it's just a mattress, an air mattress. You said that's
air mattress. Yeah, it was a nice air mattress. It was nice. It was very good. You know, like one of those ones that's got like the little levels in it, so it gives you some nice back support. But yeah, that was it. I remember I didn't turn the heater on for like, I was there for 4 months. I didn't turn it on for the first 3 months I was there. Didn't turn the heater on. So I'd just be walking around with like sweat. I was a crazy dude, man. I was crazy at the time, you know, so.
I have so many more questions, but we'll keep it moving. At some point, I'm going to ask you a lot of those questions, though, ideally on Take Command. But we got a game to talk about, unfortunately, because it wasn't pretty defensively. We'll start on the defensive side of the ball. That's where the game was lost. 34-27 final. Look, we said all week. I mean, Atlanta was not as bad as the tape had suggested coming off of Carolina. It's a week-to-week league early in September, especially in this new era. Do you buy a theory that I have, which is some of the inconsistent nature of like the Packers being the 85 Bears defensively for a few weeks, then giving up 9,000 yards and 600 points to the Cowboys. Like, I think there is this element of less preseason, less time on the grass. September's kind of August. It just seems like the extremes and the roller coaster and the unpredictability early in the year, week to week, is bigger than it's ever been before.
Yeah, and I think coaching's getting better. And so what I mean by that is, like, in the Green Bay example, I think that's a good one. It's like early in the season, they're doing some stuff that's a little bit different. You know, they're really aggressive. They're downhill. They're running some of these Jesse Minter simulated pressure disguised to cover two type stuff. And you don't really have good answers. You don't really have good tells on who they're bringing. And so the protection packages are a little bit loose. And obviously, you watch the game the other night with the Cowboys, Green Bay versus Cowboys. They have a great protection plan for Micah Parsons. They have a great understanding of what he wants to do from a pressure standpoint and get the protections targeted. And I think, like, the more data you get on some of these groups, the better you are. And I think when you look at the Atlanta Falcons, like, we had a lot of criticisms about them in terms of their offensive design, what they're doing. But I think what they were able to do is, like, you saw more. You saw the packages open up. You saw them move Bijan Robinson around the formation. You saw Drake London in different motions. You saw the stacks. You saw the bunches. You saw the run game. And all the things that they were not doing, right, they kind of were able to get to a little bit more play action, all those types of things. So I think it's important to remember that, like, when we're doing these evals, like on this show, like, those coaches in Atlanta, in Green Bay, wherever in the NFL, are extremely smart, and they do a ton of self-scouting, and so they kind of look at it and say, well, how do we make this easier for Michael Penix? And they did a great job of making it significantly easier for him. And obviously, I think it helps that, you know, the Commanders are a little bit banged up in the secondary. They're playing some new pieces back there. But overall, like, I think that's the, like, Tana does on our Command Center show, Tana does such a great job of always saying that, like, if you have a bad loss, do you think those dudes on the other side, like, they're competitive, like, this is how they feed their family. They're going to come out here with a new game plan, a new approach, and get this thing right. So I think that it's just always a good reminder, especially early in the season, to your point.
Jesse Minter, one of the names Logan dropped there, by the way, is the D coordinator of the Chargers, who Washington has this weekend, came from the collegiate level at Michigan. I want to talk a lot about him in our preview episode next week, because just starting to watch what the Chargers do defensively. It's a fun watch if you don't have to play them, but he is really, really cool and good schematically with some of the things he does. It reminds me a little bit of to your point, like what we saw from Green Bay with a guy who had spent some time in college. But that said, all right, on to the Falcons we go. So 34 points allowed. You know, when you go through some of the specifics here, it's pretty ugly statistically. Almost 7 yards per play, you know, 307 in the net passing, 313 for Michael Penix. A week after, you know, he gets benched and people are calling for his head in Atlanta, you know, he looked like a all-pro passer and had a career day. They give up 100 yards to Bijan Robinson, 69 on one play where they get him on Bobby Wagner. They give up 110 yards to Drake London, who did kind of whatever he wanted on his 10 targets. When you look back at it, if we're breaking this down as problems that involved tackling, almost 15 missed tackles in the game, lack of pass rush, they only hit Michael Penix 2 times all game. That's it, 2. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league when pressured. They got 0 pressure. And then coverage, where it just seemed like guys were running free throughout the game. How do you prioritize the reasons for the defensive failure?
Yeah, in terms of prioritizing reasons, I think this is something that it's really hard for people who are not around football a lot to understand. Is they're all, it's symbiotic, right? Football is the ultimate team game. So like, I think a great example of this is the big explosive play to Drake London down the sideline on the out and up, right? When you look at that, you say, like, I think Marshawn Lattimore is in pretty good coverage. Is he being maybe a little bit over aggressive to the out? Sure. But like, when you go back and you watch the end zone, you see that the rush is not getting home. Michael Penix pump fakes. So he gets back, hitches, pump fakes, hitches again, and then throws the football. And so to me, like, that's a pressure issue, right? And could Marshawn Lattimore be better in coverage? Sure. Like, could he be more disciplined? Sure. But also, there's an expectation there that the rush is going to get home. And so I look at kind of what the defense is kind of transitioning to. And in the beginning of the season, in training camp, in the offseason, I felt like they were really hyper-aggressive. Man coverage, we're going to blitz, we're going to do all these different things, and we're going to live by the sword, we're going to die by the sword. And you get a little bit burned. You get a couple of injuries on defense, and I feel like the identity of the defense is shifted a little bit to something that's a little bit more conservative. And when you get these – and I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's just in terms of my observation, what's happening. You expose elements of the team that you didn't get to see before, right? You didn't get to see like maybe our coverage, our back end stuff isn't as good because all training camp and all preseason we're blitzing people and we're getting the ball out quickly and we have this timing in our head in the secondary. So I think when I look at what's happening, there's been a shift. I think injury related. I think some of the schematic stuff we saw from Green Bay affected that too. And I think you're seeing some of the results of that. So if you're prioritizing one thing over another, I think it's everything together. It's the rush, it's the tackling, it's the angles. And I think when you come down to it, like when I talked to Fletch about this yesterday for the Booth Review podcast, like it's really the details, right? And I think nothing exemplifies that more than trying to tackle Bijan Robinson in outside zone. Like, he's running outside zone to the right. Like, Kinlaw does a great job, like, throwing the guard in the backfield. He splits the double team. He takes a little bit of a bad angle, right? And then Bijan just squirts through the gap for a 5-yard gain. And so on the, like, if you're just watching Kinlaw, you're like, that's a good play. If you're watching the nose guard, you're like, that's a good play. If you're watching the front side end, that's a good play. But we're inches off. And I think, like, that's kind of what you're feeling when you're watching is, can we tighten the screws from a coaching standpoint, from a player standpoint, so that these details really come to life and we can execute this defense the way Joe Witt wants it to be executed.
So you mentioned Marshawn Lattimore. That's a good launching point. He has become kind of the punching bag, it seems like, for the fan base. Oftentimes there's a player or something that ends up attracting a lot of the vitriol. It's the, you know, the light the bug attracts to or whatever. And so a lot of us are going, man, this is not good enough. And I understand how we got here, right? I mean, in the case of Marshawn Lattimore, they traded 3 picks for him and considered him to be a corner one. And then they had a chance this offseason to either give him close to $20 million, basically extend him, or to get out of the contract. And rather than going younger and bringing in another corner, there's a lot of guys that were signed that are playing at high levels right now. They doubled down on Marshawn Lattimore. And clearly, you know, the start of the season has not been great. But I guess what I want to know from you, like early in the season, maybe it was the Green Bay game when he was getting, you know, roasted. I asked you to watch him. You came back and you said maybe it wasn't as bad as people thought. Some numbers here so far on the season: 20 targets, 11 catches, 173 yards, 9 first downs, 6 penalties, 3 15 plusers. You just talked about one of them. In week 4 this week, he led the NFL in highest yards per coverage snap, meaning how many snaps you're out there in coverage and yards given up. You do the math, and it was basically 3 yards a play for him, which was worst among corners. The 43-yard explosive, which may not all be his fault, is a big reason for that. There is some symbiotic elements to this, as you mentioned. But what is your eval here? Because while you're probably right when you say it hasn't been as bad as everyone thinks, I do think when you give a lot up and then you double down and you, like, they treat him like a corner one, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And heavy lies the crown a little bit. Like, it hasn't been great. So what are you seeing there?
Yeah. So this is something I think that's really, again, like it's one of these things that's fake in the NFL. Like, a true corner one is not a thing unless you're like Patrick Surtain, you know, like the way coverage rules are allocated at the moment in terms of your ability to contact the receiver, it makes it almost impossible to cover receivers, I think. So again, I think there are elements to his game that could be detailed up, but when I see him, like, you know, like with Benjamin St. Juice, just as a point of comparison, because he was kind of the punching bag last year. He's actually playing pretty good for the Chargers now. But when I look at Benjamin St. Juste, there were fundamental deficiencies with how he played the position. He was kind of panic. He would be very grabby. He didn't trust himself. And when you watch Marshawn, I see a guy who is this is who he was when he came here, right? And these are the things that you have to – you live with him and you die with him in the sense that he's a physical press corner. Those guys get a ton of PI. Like you watch Josh Gardner, for example, in the Monday night game. Like he's going to get a ton of PIs over the course of his career because that's just how he plays, right? And you can kind of get him out of that to a certain extent, but that's what makes him good. That's his superpower, right? In the same way Richard Sherman was incredibly physical at the line of scrimmage, drew a lot of PIs. Like that's kind of what you're getting with him, right? The other thing too is I think you're getting a guy who's aware of the football. He plays to get interceptions. So in the same way that like Trayvon Diggs, as an example, gives up a lot of yardage during the course of his career. I want to say it was like, what was that, 3 years ago where he led the league in yards given up, but also had a ton of interceptions. Like that's kind of what you're doing here. This is the risk reward allocation with a player like this. And so when I watch him move, when I watch his strength, when I watch him tackle, I'm not like, man, this dude's a liability. Like, are there some things he can detail up in terms of work? Sure. But like, for example, the touchdown, like that's a zone coverage. It's a great play design. It's designed to break that specific coverage flat, inside release by number one to the corner, move him off the spot. We're going to take a sit right over the ball. Drake London gets a strike there. Like every team runs that coverage. There are probably dozens of touchdowns every week on that exact concept in the red zone. And so I look at it.
Anyone had an issue with his coverage on that.
But I'm saying, like, I know some people look at that and they say, oh, that's the issue. So you go through his targets and you're like, again, I just went through them while you were talking about it. There's the deep ball down the field, which we just talked about. Could he be better on? 1,000%.
By the way, I think on that, he guessed out, and he should have in some way. Drake London's been targeted 10 and in on 72% of throws or something this year. So, like, there's an element of I don't think he's running an out and up. And Atlanta did a lot of things differently in this game than they'd done all season, kind of against type. That was one of them. They took next to no shots, you know, throughout the season. So you're gambling, you're making a bet, and he bet wrong, so to speak.
Yeah, and then there's a couple of plays where he's in zone, it's cover two, he's sitting heavy on the flat, his hips are open, he's playing the technique, at least to my eye, the way that they seem to be coaching it. And the whole point of this choice corner concept in cover two is it puts that player in conflict. He's got to make a decision. And there are guys that can do both. They kind of are able to be in between, but like when I call CO, when I call choice, I'm trying to put you in conflict. I want you to make the wrong decision. And like, if the quarterback's good, he can be right 9 out of 10 times on that, which Michael Penix was. So I think, again, like, is it perfect? No. Is it something that I feel like is terrible? No. And again, like, he's not playing to his standard. I think you would probably say that same thing based on production. But I look at it and I say to myself, like, there's nothing, it's not like this deleterious thing. It's just about locking in on some details. And I think physically he can do it. He's got the right mindset. So that's the type of guy. It's the same thing with Josh Connerly. Like after Josh Connerly got roasted in the Green Bay game, everyone's like, they should bench him. They should sit him down. And look what he's done since then. He's actually played really two very solid football games. And I look at this and I kind of say it's the same thing with him. And people say, oh, it's a rookie. It's different. To me, it's the second year in a defense. He's still learning some of the nuance.
So I actually like that comp because I brought up on my show with Danny on Monday this idea of to get Connerly going, they basically helped him, honestly. I mean, they have done a lot of things in this like dependent sport where play calling has been more on his side and putting an extra tackle over there occasionally. Like you're allowed to do that. You should do that. It's just putting your guys in a good spot. And defensively, maybe they need to consider that with Lattimore. You know, I know you didn't love the term corner one. I don't mean it as much as like the ace of a pitching
staff. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
He is their number one corner. He needs to be. You traded three draft picks for him and are paying him the second highest cap number on your team, right? And so just generally, if you're Joe Witt, when you're putting your plan together, I think at the start of the year, you're going, all right, we'll help Lattimore less. Like, there's just going to be more asked of him than maybe the rookie who's never played Amos or Noah Igbinoghene if he's out there or whatever. I might help him with a safety or bracket something his way. And it just seems like, you know, the ask of Lattimore maybe has not been a win to this point. But I guess what I would ask you is, because I defer to, and I think you're completely right. I think a lot of times as fans, we see a guy catching a football and running, and we go, oh my gosh. And in a position, by the way, where you're out there for 70 snaps, if you have two bad ones, it's a terrible game. It's like tackle, which is another reason why I like the comp. But you can understand, too, from a fan standpoint, the perception is, well, this team gave up three draft picks, including a third rounder, and he's the second highest paid cap number guy on the team behind Daron Payne. So, you know, like when we say, well, it hasn't been great, but it hasn't been terrible, there's a bigger expectation for him where there's a frustration when you're not playing at a really high level.
And this is not a criticism of the fan base. Like, I understand the frustration and I empathize with it tremendously for the reasons that you said, right? But again, like, this is corner in the draft and in free agency is one of the toughest positions to get right. And so I think that's maybe why I'm so empathetic to the decision, because I think I look at him physically, I look at the mindset, and it checks all the boxes. Again, like when you compare him to other people that have been brought in here, it didn't fit. It was never going to work. It was never going to be right. Here, I'm like, at least that we're in the same ballpark. We're in the same zip code. And that's the difficulty of corner. Like, I've said this on our Ticket to the Draft podcast, which I do for the Commanders. Like, corner is so hard to evaluate because it's so scheme dependent. So, as an example, like, they're running a little bit more zone now in this last game against Atlanta. A little bit more zone, a little bit more cover two. He's traditionally been a man corner, right? And so these things are new skill sets, new focal points for him. And I think, like, that's something that you have to acknowledge. Even though he's a veteran player, there is some new teaching involved with this. And so I think that that's something that's important to remember. So again, I understand the fans' frustration, but I'm not giving an excuse for him. And he doesn't want excuses. Like, as a professional player, you don't want an excuse for yourself. It's just context. It's just saying he's doing something new. He's drawing tough matchups. He's on Drake London like the whole game, basically, right? Like, that's a tough matchup. That's your number one receiver. You're going to see more target share when you're on the number one, right? You're going to get more completions because that's a good football player over there. And so, again, I just say, like, when I look at him physically, when I look at his positioning, when I look at the way he tackles, when I look at the way he competes, I'm not like, oh, God, like, we're boned. I'm like, there's a lot to work with here. Let's give him an opportunity to continue to grow in the defense. And, again, let's let Joe – like, think about it. This is really like his first year in the defense because he was so injured last year. Let's give Joe Witt Jr. and the staff an opportunity to kind of say, hey, we thought he could do this. He's actually better at this than we thought. And let's do the Josh Connerly thing where we find what's best for him. And I will say that's a little bit harder to do with a secondary player because you have to run your base coverages. But there are ways. And I think as the season goes on, maybe we can find ways to maximize what he does.
Yeah, and I think the context you provide is why people come to Take Command, because there's a lot of shows where you can just point out the plays that didn't go well or the numbers being allowed. But, you know, that filling in the blanks is I think, why people are here. He's Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. I will say, you know, the Drake London matchup is one that I feel like that type of guy is where I would expect Marshawn Lattimore to have a good game. It's like the bigger bodied, you know, less explosive, twitchy, kind of like a plus size tight end, like Mike Evans fight from back in the day. Like, that's where I go, okay, I like this matchup for Lattimore more so than, you know, someone who's a little bit shiftier, more diminutive, or
so did I, to be fair. Yeah.
So that was part of, I guess, my frustration a little bit there too. And you're seeing some of the Green Bay things come back that are like plays against him that he can't do a whole lot about. Like, they did the same bit where Drake London's out wide. They bring him in motion inside toward the tackle. Then they whip him back out. Now Lattimore's traveling with him and on like a 3rd and 7 or whatever. I think it was a great catch at the end of the game. Like, Lattimore's now out of position with inside leverage, and they run this hot out route where he's got no chance. And so, like, I get that it's not all just like technique or how he's playing, but there's some stuff on tape here that we might see a few more times.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I wanted to get to another storyline on the defense if we could, though. So go back to the preview pod, and what I asked you was, how does Washington avoid at all costs Bijan Robinson out of the backfield against their linebackers? And Joe Witt, who knows more in his pinky nail than I will ever know about football, knew that if that happened, it was going to be a disaster, and it happened. So I guess my question is not like anti-Joe Witt or angry. It's, what did the Falcons do to get that look, and how does Washington try to avoid that? Luckily, you don't have Bijan Robinson on the schedule again, but there's going to be some really talented backs.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes one of the things, in the pregame show for our pregame production that we do for the Commanders, you know, the host asked me, Brian Colbert asked me, hey, you know, like, how do you stop Bijan Robinson? And that is the most confounding thing to me in the league at the moment, is if you have a back that can catch the football the way he catches it and the way he runs routes, I don't know how you stop that guy because it presents so many issues. And so, like, let's just talk through some of them, for example, right? So when he's in the dot, they're in the pistol, when he's in the dot, how do you cover him? Like, who matches up with him? Usually it's one of the linebackers. They've got some type of bracket on him. If he goes right, the right linebacker will take him. If he goes left, the left linebacker will take him. The other one becomes the plug player, right? So you say, okay, well, we want to play man coverage. So, like, who do we put in there on him?
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
So you say, oh, well, we should put a corner in there. So are you taking Bobby Wagner or Frankie Louvu out and putting a corner in on first and second down to stop the run? That seems silly because they're a run first, heavy run of the football outside zone team. You need to be physical, stop the run. Okay, so maybe you say, oh, well, just we want a matchup. So we'll put the corner in there for the matchup. We'll put Mike in there for the matchup. Then Bobby or Frankie draws a different matchup. They draw Kyle Pitts. They draw a slot receiver. Like, this is where it becomes impossible to me to say, hey, how do you take him away completely? And so one of the things is that they played a little bit more zone. I think that was part of it, to kind of limit the one-on-one matchups with linebackers and running backs. But sometimes you got to throw your pitch. You got to get in a five-man front. You got to play man coverage, and you got to say, let's heat us up and let's try to get after you a little bit and stop the run. And when they do that, they had a really good call on. I'm talking about the explosive play. They're in that jam front. They're playing man coverage. There's a little bit of foot traffic. I'm sure Bobby would say he wishes he would have played over the top as opposed to underneath. Either way, it's a completion. Either way, Bobby's one-on-one with him. And, like, over the course of 65 plays or 70 plays in a game, those happen. Those one-on-one matchups happen, and you hope to God that you've got the right call and they don't. In this case, you had the wrong call on, and they had the perfect call, like, literally the perfect call. Like, you know, I coach high school football. They're running some type of man-picking mesh there, right, with the two guys kind of picking the linebacker. You've got two guys creating traffic, and you've got him running the rail. That is the perfect call. I call that call in high school, and it's Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay. You call that call to pick that guy to get the back one-on-one for those explosive opportunities. So to me, it's like the worst case scenario. And again,
when you say it was the wrong call for Washington, what was the call and what would have been better?
So basically, if you knew they were going to run that, you'd call some type of zone. You'd call Tampa 2. Yeah. And then you'd have that bunch, you'd have that flat player right there. He's going to throw that rail on the corner would just pick it off, and it's dead on arrival, right? But you didn't. You called man. And again, it's not a criticism of the call because this happens all the time. Like, Kyle Shanahan, one of the smartest offensive minds in football, he'd make a call, and then in film on Monday, we'd come in and he'd be like, there's no if versus this call, there's no answer versus that blitz.
Right.
So that's on me. And that happened.
John Harbaugh said this, the Ravens head coach, after the game Sunday, they got worked by the Chiefs and then Lamar got hurt. Like, they were talking about a few of the really bad plays on offense. And he's like, look, the call was dead. Like, we had a call that gave us no chance. I don't even think he was trying to kill his OC, but he was explaining, like, people were saying, why did Lamar do this? And he's like, that was a dead play on arrival. Yeah. There's just times where you call something, they call something, and they won the chess match on that play.
Yeah, and so when those happen, you're kind of hoping your player can elevate and just make a tackle. So instead of it being a 75-yard gain, it's a 30-yard gain or whatever it is. It's the same thing, like, versus, like, when you're in cover three and you run a big out. Like, that ball will be completed. You're just hoping that maybe the pressure gets home a little bit quicker, the quarterback makes an errant throw. But, like, there are certain things versus certain coverage that will be open. And then that play is that route will be open. Unless you get a Herculean effort from someone in the defense, which as a coach and as a former player and being around good coaches is something that those really good coaches don't expect from their guys because they want to put them in good positions to be successful.
So then let me ask you this. Is there a issue, like my perception with the linebacking core? I think Bobby Wagner is the best on the planet at what he does, which is like playing Mike linebacker in a phone booth or even as a you know, moving still, like coming downhill. We saw it a lot as they did some of those delayed blitzes against the Raiders. He had a great game as a pass rusher. He went into the game, I think, the top blitzing linebacker in the league in terms of, you know, pressure percentage. Do they have a problem, like, horizontally running at the linebacking, like at that level? Just Monday, Dan Quinn was asked, I think it was Ben Standing of The Athletic, about, you know, the idea of, like, you know, playing Bobby Wagner on 100% of snaps at this point, as opposed to like more of a, hey, you're really good against the run. You're good in these looks, but maybe against a player like Bijan Robinson, is there someone who can run a little more that might be better suited? What's your thought there about a future Hall of Famer who's like one of the all time greats who's still awesome when he's, you know, being asked to do the thing that he's great at?
I think my question would be is like, is there a linebacker in the league that could win that matchup?
No, but in fairness, there are linebackers that could do a better job running with Bijan Robinson.
But I'm saying on this specific play, in this specific instance, right, with two guys creating picks for you, like, he's going to be open. Like, that call, that execution by Atlanta, like, I don't care if you're Fred Warner, like, he will be open. You know what I mean? Like, that's the design of the play.
So I guess I'm speaking then not specifically that play, but again, there's 13 games to go here, and there's a lot of pass catching running backs. Like, and blow me out of the water. Tell me I'm wrong. I mean, my perception is they're going to have a problem when it comes to teams getting guys against their linebackers in space. Is that a flawed thought? Is there something they can do about that?
So, no, it's not a flawed thought, but I this is something that I think is really interesting about football in general, offensive football, defensive football, is they are your worst coverage player, linebackers usually. So the whole point of the offense is to get them in coverage situations. So like when you think about like Drift as an example or Kyle Shanahan, everyone says like, why is Kyle Shanahan's offense so good? And like, you know, we've talked about this a lot because he was here, whatever. Is you're isolating those two dudes in the middle of the field because they're in run conflict, they're in pass conflict, they have to cover better athletes. Like, that's the whole issue with that. They have to cover tight ends, they have to cover running backs. So every team in the NFL has issues with this, right? Like Roquan Smith before he got hurt, like there's some terrible cover, and he's one of the better linebackers in the league. There's some terrible coverage clips of him, right? Where he's got a run conflict, he's got to match a seam, the dude's wide open, it ends up being an explosive play, right? So my thing is like, that's the whole point of defense is how do you insulate those guys? And so is Bobby the coverage player that he once was? No. I think generally this is a hard thing that needs to be contended with for every team in the league. And are there things we can do to manage it from a play caller standpoint? Yes. Is Joe Wood Jr. acutely aware of that? Absolutely. And I think that's where you got to kind of say,
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What are the, you know, we talked about insulating Marshawn. I'm not that worried about insulating Marshawn. I am more worried about insulating those guys and putting them in positions where they can be doing what they need to do. So like, I want them blitzing. I want them getting downhill. I want the simulated pressure stuff to come back, right? That's, I think, where this team is at its best, because you're speaking to their skill set and you're taking them out of these compromising looks. So that's more what I'd look to, is like, this is something every team is negotiating. And then the question then becomes is how Joe Witt Jr. manages this moving forward.
So then the last thing, and we've gone long on the defense, we'll be shorter on the offense, but I do wonder, so to try to get more pressure here moving forward, like, what should Joe Witt do? Because that's how you're going to help Lattimore. That's how you're going to make the guys on the back end right. And their job is too difficult when you hit the quarterback twice. And on that 43-yard gain, Penix, I pointed this out. I posted this clip on Twitter. Like, he's climbing. He's climbing. He's climbing. He's crow hopping. Like, it's the easiest throw in the world. I mean, it's not a real ask of a corner on an island to do that. So it's two hits on the QB. They're playing a team this week that won't have either of its all-pro caliber tackles. The Chargers have given up a pressure rate that's one of the highest in the league over the last couple of weeks. And in fact, after Joe Alt got hurt, it was over 50% of snaps where Justin Herbert was just under duress. I mean, they cannot keep him upright. It feels to me like this is a week where you 100% can and will get pressure. But do you think they need to get more aggressive back to some of the, you know, the fire that, you know, the five dog, the six blitz stuff they were doing? Or do you think they need to, like, win with four? What's your prescription here against the Chargers?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts I have about this. And again, like, this is something that's a more long-term, like, research project, is most defensive coordinators have a line somewhere where it's like, when we get to this point, so let's say it's 3rd and 7, we feel comfortable bringing our pressure. So one thing that I will point out is I think just getting a little bit better first and second down efficiency will help them bring more pressure, right? Help them get into these situations where they feel more comfortable calling some of these looks. I will say, going back and watching, like, I think the big plays stick out, obviously, like the explosive play to Drake London, the explosive play to Bijan. But the thing that really was the dagger, it was the death by 1,000 paper cuts for the most part, right? It was like, hey, we got a choice route by Bijan. Here's a 5-yard gain. Here's a 12-yard gain on a little corner route. Here's this little, you know, it wasn't like, and here's a 5-yard run by Bijan. Here's a 6-yard run by Algier. So, like, they were always, for the most part, in pretty positive down and distance. And there were a couple second and longs that they weren't able to capitalize on. I think John Kime made a post about that. But I think on the whole, it was those 5 to 15 yard hits that they were able to get underneath that really made it challenging. And I think it kind of kept them out of the stuff that they want to do in terms of pressuring on third down. So that's what I'd say, is like, can we clean up the first and second down stuff to get in those situations where we're bringing more, we're being who we want to be more. And so I think that's something I'm going to keep an eye on moving forward, because I do think they have to do more of that. I think that was kind of the handshake agreement that we all kind of thought intellectually was like, they don't have that elite edge rusher, but that's okay, because we're going to get 8 sacks from Frankie Louvu. We're going to get 10 sacks from Dorrance Armstrong. We're going to get 6 sacks from Von Miller. And that works if you're in those third down pressure packages, which they haven't been in. And they weren't in enough in Atlanta because of the first and second down efficiency of Atlanta, I would say.
Yeah. And specifically, if I could speak, the second down issues that they had.
Yeah.
Because there were plenty of times where they were actually, they did the hard part on first down and earned the right to rush the quarterback a little bit. And then on 2nd and 17 and 14 and 13 and 15, you're giving up these big monster first down type plays over and over again. And that was definitely an issue.
And to piggyback off of that point, I think this is also something that's important. I really liked how Atlanta called those situations, because they weren't trying to find chunks. They were trying to find, here's 8 yards, and now we're in 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, you know, and we can, that's a much more manageable down and distance. It really reminded me a lot of how Cliff calls longer down and distances, right? He doesn't think of it as like, I need to get it all back with one. It's like, I need to get 25% back, and then I need to get 30% back, and then now we're ready to rock and roll. And I think hats off to Atlanta, because I thought they called those situations really, really well, and they kind of had a feel for what Joe Witt wanted to be in from a coverage standpoint, and the concepts reflected that.
Commanders did get their first takeaway of the season in their four games, intercepting Penix. They've given up 32 explosives, 28th in the league. Last year at this time, they'd given up 34 explosives, which was tied for 30th in the NFL. All right, he's Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. Let's talk offense. We'll see if Logan agrees. I thought the offense was good enough to win the football game, and Mariota did plenty in this game. But let's dive into that next on Take Command.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.